Welcome to the Impact Vest podcast, where innovation, sustainability, and technology converge to shape a better future. I'm Aisha Williams, founder and CEO of Impact Vest. In each episode, we bring you bold ideas, expert insights, and real-world solutions from changemakers across industries. Whether you're an entrepreneur, policymaker, investor, or just passionate about impact, this podcast is for you. So let's dive in. Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome to our Q1 roundtable of 2025. Very nice to speak to everyone again. And I am very happy to host this podcast because this is our first podcast with all women founders. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. We'll be speaking about economic transformation here at the beginning of the year 2025 and leading the transition towards a more sustainable and regenerative future. So very much looking forward to this conversation with great roundtable participants. And I'm actually going to go to you, Flora, first to introduce yourself.
So hi, everyone. I am Flora Espiant, and I am the CEO and founder of Cozy Connect. So Cozy Connect is a platform that offers services to the general public whilst having professional providing the services. So starting from the hairdresser to the gardener and the electrician to the painter, making a connection between the customer and also those professionals. So I've started this business recently, and I'm looking forward to having this conversation with you, Aisha and Tumi.
Perfect, Flora. Thank you for being here with us. And Tumi, great to have you back on our roundtables. And please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Aisha, for having me here. Lovely to be here. I'm Tumi Fraser, and the CEO and co-founder of Fourth Wave Technology, based in South Africa with some footprints in the United States. We are in the clean tech space, agri-clean tech, where we work with small farmers, emerging commercial farmers or food processors. We also support governments and research institutions in just ensuring that we, we grow the right type of food, and also we have data-driven and climate-friendly agriculture. And also include many of the farmers, small farmers that have been excluded from the digital world to ensure that, we have a sustainable future, sustainable communities, and sustainable environment. So it is good to be here and look forward to this discussion.
Thank you, Tumi. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm so happy to have both of you here because you both have businesses that are quite transformational for your sectors. So starting with you, Flora, what gave you the idea to launch this platform and to really make a room for local services on the Ivory Coast to advertise and to bring the services together in one place?
Yeah. So for me, it was the lack of a platform, this type of platforms, because in Ivory Coast, for example, if you need a professional to do your hair, to come into your garden, for example, it tends to be word of mouth. So most of the time, you don't really know who is in your house or who's doing your hair. Perhaps that person did someone else's hair and it was great, but the style you want, they just cannot do it. So even the search of that person, so if it's not the word of mouth, you just go in the market and then you've got like thousands and thousands of people. It's not really safe in a way, because when blades I use, for example, on hair to style it, in certain places, or scissors, it's not hygienic. So because you're in a market where hundreds of people have been used. So this is just one example. So for me, Cozy Connect really plays a role in fostering economic transformation. So by having these two sites connected, having those key people providing these services and being able to vet this professional. So having a reviews, people can provide the feedback on how this professional helped them. So the platform really purpose there is there to help in fostering economic transformation for me. So by creating this connection in between the service providers and the client. So it's around reducing inefficiencies also. When everything is just so manual, I would say, there is a big lack of efficiency. So it's about reducing also these inefficiencies in informal service providers and enhances transparency, because again, there's a big lack of transparency in anything that is done, and enabling small businesses to thrive by having this platform. So it really is about empowering local talent through technology. Technology, well, I'm sure we will touch on technology quite a bit for this conversation. So for me, Cozy Connect was really born out of these challenges that I've seen around. And the aim is to directly contribute to the creation of economic inclusion and align with the broader goals of regional trade and industrial growth. That's it.
And I think you touched on something really interesting, Flora, about enabling technology for the personalization of services. And this relates a lot to what you're working on to me, in terms of really harnessing the power of technology to increase food production and waste reduction also.
Absolutely. Yes. So, for me, I think we got to look at differentiate between the economic transformation that brings about long-term sustainability and regeneration, as opposed to the traditional economic empowerment, which is what's been happening, where yes, we're looking at, which really encompasses the GDPs of our nations and ways and some projects that say, yes, we are empowering women, we're empowering young people. But when you really look at it, while that is happening in the background, you end up actually with a cost, costing the environment, costing some social issues in terms of inclusion. And like what Flora said earlier, talking about the inclusion, because it's all about that. There is no point in us saying there's economic growth or empowerment when it only benefits a few. So the technology that I have to empower farmers was born out of that, looking at disruptive technologies and saying, how can we simplify them to meet the needs of regular people on the ground, regardless of their educational status or socioeconomic, so where they can speak to the AI technologies, the machine learning, like everybody else, interact like everybody else and speak their own language. So I have brought that technology to the level of the small farmers in Africa throughout the continent. And then also because in South Africa, if you look at our stats, about 5 to 10% of the commercial farmers are black farmers. The rest, so there is that gap of inclusion because they lack technologies to know how much they're putting, just into their food, the nutrients levels. And now that with the climate change, understanding, okay, water is becoming a scarce resource. How do I then farm regeneratively so I can, treat my soil? I mean, to call up an agronomist costs almost like $3,000 between $2,000 and $3,000. So think about that. And it's a once off. So right now with the technology they have, it's almost like having a digital agronomist in your pocket, accessible anywhere, anytime, in any language, whenever you need that. And then not only that, we also work with the governments because in Africa, one of the challenges is lack of data. Real-time data. So the data helps both the farmers, commercial farmers, the food processors to ensure efficiencies along the value chain. It also ensures governments and research institutions such as Water Research Council right now, I work with them where they want to understand the areas that are water scarce. And in those areas, what do we then do to ensure that those farmers can also grow food and can also trade? So now we're looking at different methods of teaching them how to grow more drought-resistant kind of crops. So those are the kind of things that are happening that then makes this about sustainability of the environment, sustainable environment. But then also because of the kind of projects we're running where we have special economic zones where these farmers can share resources, not only technologies, but make sure whatever is happening in this structure, you're using clean energy, you're using, everything circular economy where there's no waste. So everything is really regeneration of every part of the process. So it's very exciting to see even the partners that are coming on board now opening their coffins and say, hey, this is the way to go because we are hard pressed. Climate change is upon us. And we got to do something and do it like yesterday.
That's a great answer to me. I'm going to pause here because I see Vanessa's here. So when we come back to the conversation, we're going to talk about the difference between regeneration and the traditional model that we have. So we'll kind of make the comparison here, but we'll get back to it. And Vanessa, we have to do your intro here. So welcome to our roundtable.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's honestly a pleasure and honor to be sitting here at this table with the three of you to discuss some really important changes and shifts that are happening globally and that affect us all because we are all inhabitants of this beautiful Mother Nature, beautiful Mother Gaia that we reside on. So my name is Vanessa Chislett. I am the founder and CEO of She So Tea Company, located in Canada. I've been working in the tea industry for 20 years now. As of this year, it's been a long road, and it's been really interesting to see the North American tea market really shift, even in the last 10 years, let alone the last 5 years. You know, we've all seen so many shifts and changes, and you know, with the issues of not only climate change but also supply chain and value chain, as Tumi was pointing out. We live in a very global, I mean, I work in a very global commodities-based industry, and we all know the history of tea, which is very intense and harsh, and it comes with a lot of issues that we're still facing today with how it's been set up in structure and a lot of changes that are very necessary to make, not only from an agricultural perspective, but also from a humanity perspective, you know, and making sure that we are supporting the farmers and that we're trying to cut out as many of the middlemen as possible. So, yeah, I'm very passionate to be here and thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, and we're really happy to have you here, Vanessa. And like Tumi was saying about her focus on regeneration, do you also see this in the tea business? And is this what you're focused on this year, 2025?
Yeah, this last year, you know, since we connected about a year ago, I was on another round table with a few gentlemen from Africa. And my like ancestral background, I've got generations of Dutch Mennonite farmers that were settled in Ukraine, and my grandfather actually fled World War II. But that like farming passion for not just like biodynamic farming, but also regenerative farming, like going back to our roots. Like we all need to go back to our roots because part of the issues that we've been facing, especially on the food supply chain level, as well as the depletion of the soil, is like one of the biggest things when it comes to agriculture. And that's an issue globally. We're all experiencing that. It doesn't matter what continent we're on, right? And so coming back to to working with nature, coming back to working in those natural ways and being able to restore a lot of the minerals and the nutrients back to the soil is part of how we need to switch in order to create that sustainability. You know, we've put so many you know, toxins and poisons and pesticides on our food, and yes, that's to try and like get a bigger yield out of the land, but over time, like it's not a long-term solution by any means, because that then has created all of these health and wellness issues in the physical bodies of humans. You know, we're consuming those poisons essentially. And my journey into tea actually started 20 years ago. I was in high school, and simultaneously, I had discovered this tea house. And at the same time, as I started to drink tea and the teas from all over the world started to purify and heal my body, I ended up, you know, starting to detox. Those teas and botanicals started to detox my body, and it started to shed a lot of the chemicals of the food that I grew up in. So, and doctors couldn't figure it out. I started developing all these autoimmune issues and food sensitivities. And so that was also when I started with Chinese medicine. And so when we're looking at issues of agricultural farming and how we're producing food, we can't separate that from the physical body and our human bodies. Like, we are one with nature. We're made out of earth, right? We're all made out of this beautiful planet. And so, what's best for the environment, what's best for the earth is also best for what's best for our bodies too, right? And so, yeah, I've just seen those trends too along the supply chain. And with tea, as I'm sure many of you know, it's a global commodity. Like, these beautiful plants, which most of the people can't see, the tea plants, they grow in like 50 plus different countries across the globe, including many, many, many African countries too, which so many people are unaware of. So there's like the environmental, agricultural side of things, but then again, there's the humanity side of things, because as I've mentioned in a few of my other interviews, when you start looking at the supply chain of tea, the average point of contact in North America, specifically from garden to cup, is like 10 to 15 points of contact. And so we're like not even connected to the roots or the soil of where these teas come from, you know? And then the other thing that's wild about our North American market, and this is what I think the consumer is starting to push back on, they're like, well, we want fresh product. We want fresh food. We want to know where our cup of tea is coming from, and that the money that I'm spending is going back to the farmers. It's going direct to source as much as possible. In a global industry, it's a little bit more challenging to make that happen. But at the same time, it's not impossible, because we've been working towards paving the way to integrated food supply chain systems for a very long time. And us in the Northern Hemisphere, I know in many European countries too, like, we have to import a lot of our food that's coming from other countries. But yeah, the other thing too is that, on the grocery store shelves, if you're looking at a box of tea bags, for instance, those products have usually been sitting in circulation for like 8 to 10 years. Like, the tea itself has been sitting in circulation, not to mention all of the points of contact. So I think the consumer, like, people are becoming way more informed and more educated, which that's exactly what needs to happen to shift these supply chains and to shift the way that we've done business for a very long time. And that's also caused me to have to be really agile and really prepared to make changes and shifts within my supply chain and get to the root and get to the bottom and really start to build those relationships direct with source. One other issue, I think that, just from a labeling, CPG, which stands for consumer packaged goods, product labeling in North America, because of these authority bodies like FDA and all these labeling bodies, they're, in my humble opinion, sure, they've, like, organic or fair trade, these labels have created the marketing around informing the consumer. But at the same time, there's also a lot of red tape and a lot of discrepancies and hypocrisy that comes with some of these labels. And you're like, well, does that label actually represent the thing that they are trying to represent? Like, let's look into the regulations that a product has to meet in order to get this label. Is it just about money? Like, are these companies just paying, the thousands of dollars to get those labels? And at the end of the day, like, the requirements for getting that label is still not like fully 100% authentic, right? So there's a lot of those shifts that need to happen. And I mean, specifically in Canada, over the last 5 years, our federal government has also made a lot of roadblocks for companies to actually step into the authenticity of creating these beautiful supply chains and changes, right? So the labeling and education of the consumer to the consumer is also very, very, very important to make sure that people are informed about some of the discrepancies with these systems that were created for the purpose of, like, bettering the environment and bettering the supply chain and bettering the product at the end of the day. So I'm seeing a lot of shifts coming in the next, couple years and for the better too. And sometimes we gotta like shake up the systems that are established right now and find a new route, And that doesn't have to be aggressive. It doesn't have to be combative either. It's like, what's the woo way? What's the middle way? Like, how do we create more harmony and like find routes around these bodies that are actually hindering people from actually creating good products that are going to serve everyone along the supply chain, right? So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, and you brought up some excellent points, Vanessa. Really speaking about transparency, trust, and it makes me think of an article I read about while we see the rapid transformation in terms of technology and the economy, in some ways it's leading us back to the more human elements of building relationships. And like you said, getting back to nature, or kind of it's freeing us up in a way to think about, well, what is actually important in this transformation that we're going through? And it makes me think of your business, Flora, also kind of really the value of the relationships and transparency and services, right? It's really leading us back to what is actually the purpose of technology? What is the purpose of building our businesses and providing the services? And so do you see this link also, Flora, in your business of how important it is to have transparency and trust in building the relationships that you need in your business?
Yes, totally. As you touch on Aisha, across visibility and transparency, right? So, I mean, the role of technology in economic transformation. So, in Africa, for example, to me, digital transformations such as mobile banking and blockchain have transformed industries. So, for example, you've got M-Pesa in Kenya, I think, which has increased financial inclusion from 26% at the time in 2006 to 83% in 2023. So, there. Had a massive impact. So many people didn't have access to local banking. And so that really enabled these people to become a lot more independent. It's all around technology. In Africa, for example, we can replicate the same fintech to connect small businesses and small and medium enterprises business to credit. So enable these people to develop their business with Cozy Connect, if we just go back to Cozy Connect on its own. So as we discussed earlier on, the purpose of Cozy Connect is really is to connect the professionals with the customers. So giving them this freedom to be able to develop their businesses by this platform, because infrastructure, as we touch on the regenerative future, if we look just at Africa, you've got access to finance that is very difficult. So small and medium enterprises, which account for most jobs in Africa, often they really struggle to get credit to be able to expand on their business. Interest rates in Africa are super high. It's 15% as an average. So paying this back, it's really, really hard for these businesses that are already struggling at to start with. And also you've got infrastructure deficits. These people tend to go in a big market rather than having their small businesses. So there are about 600 million African that lack electricity. So even if you have the infrastructure, you need to provide electricity to that. And then you've got all the paperwork that goes behind it. When you do have a local, you've got this whole policy and consistency. You need to go through all sorts of doors to be able to fully be legal. So Cozy Connect as a platform kind of addresses the infrastructure bit, whereby we provide a platform that is reliable, that is transparent, and that builds and provide more trust. You know, with the reviews that you get, you know who you kind of working with, and also by reducing this informal network and providing truly accessible services. Solutions. So Cozy Connect kind of really is there to build trust, to provide visibility on both sides to the professionals and clients, and also to help fostering this economic resilience underserved areas, because it's not just in, you know, much more developed areas, it's a lot on rural, on the rural front too.
Yes, and then this makes me think of Tumi. You're speaking about great points here about really focusing on empowerment, right? And that's when we speak about an economic transformation this year and going closer to 2030, what we're really speaking about is empowering those who maybe have been left out of different systems and now really providing the support and technology needed to empower large groups of people. And this makes me think of what you're working on, to me in your business, especially that you focus on data-driven regenerative farming. And can you speak a bit more about that, about the importance of building relationships and trust and transparency?
So it's very crucial. I mean, I'm going to tap on what the ladies have already said. You know, that whole transparency is crucial. And actually, I think COVID has actually moved a lot of people, a lot of consumers to wanting to eat better, to live better, exactly what Vanessa was saying. So they want to know where the food comes from. So that's where we come in with our technology, where not only do we educate, of course, we make farmers aware of, you know, understand what regenerative farming is. And because the soil in Africa is different, you know, the importance of treating the soil so that, you know, because the soil is an indication, the health of your soil is an indication of the health of your crop, basically. So the more you treat it, the better it is, because then you know you don't need as much water. And even if you're waiting on the rains, at least the rains are able to be absorbed that way. So our technology enables that traceability that Vanessa was also alluding to earlier, because people want to know where's this food coming from. So there's some kind of story that we can tell and say, well, it comes from, because we also can track in terms of where it comes from, what region, whether you're working, we're working with the women, especially women in very rural areas, because what I've heard over time is that, oh, women you know, are best in Africa for the most part. Farmers, you know, women are the ones that work the field, but they don't own the land. You see? So when we're talking real, true, transformative economic empowerment, this is where we don't just say, well, it's good for women to be just workers because, you know, they're so gentle with fruits and things as opposed to men. It's actually the time for us to say, okay, we want to give women because they are a majority working on the farms that they don't even own, that they not don't have the rights to. You know, so how do we then bring women along and say, well, in some of these communities, now what I'm actually doing over and above the data, now I'm going to the key partners. You're talking about partnerships, stakeholders like mining houses that are, you know, extracting stuff from the land. So now it's their time to give back to those communities. Now I'm going to them and say, hey, you have this land. We are going to this partner so we can empower young people and women in these communities, because in South Africa and throughout the continent, youth unemployment in South Africa alone is sitting at 63%. And this is youth that some of them have gone to schools, to college, and all that. But, you know, because now we know since post-COVID, organizations can only, you know, hire so much. So it is now people us like ourselves who can come in, especially within agriculture, because it's one of the industries that where you can actually create a whole lot of jobs. And we now capitalizing on the land like that one, and then we track it, we trace where the crops come from, who planted, how many of them were women, how many of them were young people, where are they located, what has gone into the food. Now, when you're talking about the labeling, Vanessa, that data then comes from us, where we're saying, actually, the contents, I can tell you in real time what the nutrients, what nitrogen, you know, how much nitrogen has gone into the spinach, how much of that. But also what I'm doing, because for the most part, buyers have shunned away from buying from small farmers because they say, oh, they don't know how to grow our food. So now I take the technology and I go to them and say, hey, McCain, you're from Canada, you know McCain, they supply McDonald's, and say, okay, if you are buying spinach and supplying McDonald's or whoever, you know, how much nitrogen do you need? And then they give the spec. Then we integrate that spec. Now, this is when we're talking economic empowerment, because now you're empowering through education so that when the the farmer then puts in that seed, they know they have a buyer already for it, because over the years they've been doing it the other way around, just growing whatever, whichever way they think it should be grown, and then go stand there and say, oh, buy my crops. And then the buyer say, oh no, I'm not buying that, it has too much nitrogen, it has too much this, so now we're doing it the other way around and saying to the buyer, we have the technology, the farmers know exactly the spec, they will follow the spec to the T because it's all in the mobile application, and we can track if Tumi is putting too much nitrogen before whatever, we can actually flag it and say, hey, go back and look at what she's doing and then correct it. You don't wait until harvest and then say, oh no, I can only take 50% of that. This is where we're talking about economic empowerment of the farmers, because now their rejection rates are less, and they are more empowered. They can be competitive. Not only are they becoming just, good farmers, then they also get involved in the processing, because that's where the money is within their communities. We're not saying, oh, learn how to grow tomato. Now we're saying, how can we turn that into a tomato paste, into a tomato sauce, into all kinds of things? So this for me is, generational. This is sustainable, because when I speak to some of the key partners and stakeholders, there were some organizations that are saying, oh yeah, we're empowering farmers. And I say, okay, how are we doing this? And so, oh, we're giving them groceries. How do you give a farmer groceries? You give them seeds and fertilizers, show them how to do that, let them grow their own food. So these key, I think we need that kind of change that I see happening, where even the nonprofits, the large foundations, are now starting to say, how can we, instead of donor becoming donors that they've been over the years in Africa, throwing the money into a deep dark hole that never really goes anywhere. Now we're saying, partner with us, people on the ground who understand where the women are, the young people, and we can give you data and you can measure in real time. How many of them, how much yield have we gotten? How many farmers have we connected to the off-takers? And so that in real time, even the investors now, impact investors, we're just saying, this is how partner, all of us, whether you government, you are a research institution wanting to understand where the how the water is being used in agriculture, all these now are becoming key stakeholders. And this is how we can enable sustainable economic transformation long term, with all of us working together instead of working in silos.
Yeah, it's such a great point to me that you brought up about the importance of a sustainable economic transformation through partnerships, right? And no longer working in silos, but thinking about partnerships in business and real-time data, right? Not relying on stats from different organizations, but really asking in real time, real individuals, what the data is from their real life, because it looks very, very different, the real-time data, than when it's through an organization. And do you see the same thing, Vanessa, in your business, or how does it look, the value of partnerships and the value of real-time data, and for businesses to work in partnerships instead of working in silos, like what Tumi mentioned?
Yeah, that's a like for me, I'm seeing a lot of it from like the consumer, the distributor side of things, the buyer side of things. And one of my biggest frustrations in the 20 years I've been in this industry is the further down the rabbit hole that you go when you're looking at who the suppliers or sourcers or distributors are within North America, the transparency is not there. Like a lot of wholesalers or distributors or even co-packers, for instance, they're sourcing from other companies that are actually within North America. So again, that's another layer in this value chain and another separation from the actual farms. And yet there's a lot of greenwashing that's happening, especially in my industry in North America. And it's just like absolutely infuriating, because I'm like, no, well, I want to have that data, that information that Tumi was mentioning, of like how many points of contact in the supply chain, where are the farms? And I understand, like, when you're dealing with small farmers, like that one small farm can only produce so much, right? So if you are disclosing who your farmers are, there's got to be that partnership agreement. There's got to be that agreement that will like, we're big enough at this point where we can buy your whole crop from that season, right? And yeah, establishing those partnerships and really making it official between the farmers, especially when you start direct sourcing, is so valuable and so important. What's frustrating is like the major wholesalers within North America, both in Canada and the US, they also own the cheese sommelier certification or the education behind that too. And so you're like, whoa, there's kind of a discrepancy here. So the way that people become educated is through your education, and you have to buy their tea, your tea. It's all kind of monopolized already. And it's been that way for a long time too. And so we have all these like smaller businesses who go into, wanting to start a tea company because they're like, oh, I love tea. I love the health benefits. I love the community. I love the culture that's all surrounding that. It's very nice and naive, but then you start to realize, oh, this major wholesaler over here is actually sourcing from this major wholesaler over here. Where are they actually getting their product from? And you can't even present that data to your consumer because you're sourcing from all these wholesalers that are selling to each other. It's like this madness. Like, it doesn't, like, talk about a mad tea party, like absolutely bonkers tea party. It's like this is not the solution, and it's not going to create the transparency that the consumer at the end of the day wants, right? And yet in their marketing, they're like, oh yeah, we direct source. Yeah, that might be like 10% of the products that you're actually selling and serving. And the complexity with the tea industry, especially when it comes to the overly blended botanicals that go into the tea. There's the tea leaves, and then there's all the botanicals. So you've got one tea that's got like 15 different ingredients in it. Well, where are each of those ingredients, each of those botanicals coming from? Are we telling those stories of like transparency we're getting Saigon cinnamon, right, from this specific small farm over here, and we've got the ginger coming from this farm over here. There's almost a reluctance because these large wholesalers, they know that there isn't that transparency and that they're not going to give it up, right? And so, yeah, I think we're about to experience some really beautiful times because at the end of the day, especially with tea, you go back to tea's history, and it was originally discovered by Buddhist monks in Yunnan, China, like the tea plant, the Camellia sinensis. And the character itself of tea in China and Japan, it depicts the interlacement of sky, earth, and humanity. And there's a spiritual tie to that, and deep in like the belly of our guts, especially as women, we can feel this beautiful shift that we're seeing in the business world and the food supply chain world, which has been so such masculine energy dominant, that we're like, no, the antidote to all of the horrible issues of humanity and, raping and pillaging of the land and the soil and the nutrients that everything that we put into our body is grown in, and what we've conditioned over the last several decades. The antidote to that is to get back to that, the power of the data of knowing, like, this amount of this nitrate or this is in the soil. And tea, I don't think, like in the Western world, in North America specifically, tea hasn't even been represented with the same level of prestige as wine. And tea is even more complex. You got one plant that produces six different kinds of teas. So white tea, yellow tea, green tea, oolong, black, and pu'er. They all come from the same plant, depending on how they're processed. But then you go back to the terroir, you go back to the soil, you go back to the plants themselves, and there's a beauty in being able to bring that information to the table, to bring an experience that is not only educative, but also just so much more tied back to the heart and soul of what tea actually is, and the unity that it actually brings too. Like you think of whenever you go out for a cup of tea with someone, you're like, okay, I'm sitting down, I'm gonna enjoy this time. Like I want to savor the company of that person I'm sharing this cup of tea with. Unlike coffee, it's like we need to, like get our energy and go over this information and data. Like there's a little bit of a contrast in those two beverages in the nature of the experience that it brings, right? And so I'm just really excited, even though I've sacrificed so much, I've gone through a lot in these 20 years of building my company very, very, very slowly while watching, our food industry transform, but the tea industry transforms so much. I'm so excited for us to get back to the heart and soul of the nutrients and the community that tea does really encompass in such a beautiful way. And it means something to everybody because it's grown in so many countries. You ask anyone all over the world, like what their earliest memory of tea is, and it usually comes back to the grandmother, grandma making tea or like, So that's what I'm excited about to see how this data is going to actually bring us back into our humanity, in such a beautiful way.
And I think the same thing. That's such great ideas that you bring up, Vanessa, about the transformation that we're seeing. And Flora and Tumi, you brought it up as well, is that in some really interesting ways, technology and data transparency is bringing us back to really human elements about how important it is to build relationships and get back to nature, the transparency of our food, what goes into our food, where do we source our food from, what are the conditions of the farmers and the supply chain. I think it's really making everyone much more aware of how we live on an everyday basis. And in some ways, it's bringing us back to kind of a more local feeling of what actually goes into what we're buying, the services we're buying, those who we're doing business with. And it really is transforming the business landscape. And I think it's really, really fitting here having our all women's panel and how it may be making space for more women's entrepreneurship, right? And so it's very, very interesting as we kind of go through this transformation. It's bringing us back to the basics, right? Probably our grandparents knew it, our great grandparents knew it, and kind of we're kind of going full circle here, right? And so technology is allowing us to really build relationships and really strengthen bonds that we may have lost before. And it kind of brings me here. We've had great conversation here on our round table. I'm sad it has to end, but it brings me to for all of you, if there was one takeaway, one way that you would describe this transformation here in 2025, or right here at the beginning of the year, how would you describe it, and what do you wish to see in terms of your industries, your businesses, how we can actually build more transparency and trust in business and really lead this transformation in a more human way? And I'll start with you, Flora.
Yes, sure. I mean, for me, Aisha, economic transformation, at least in Africa, and touching on Ivory Coast also, entails moving from reliance on raw commodities, because that's where we've been relying a lot, export to creating diversified, we talked a lot about it, value-added economies, inclusive economies. So this includes fostering an industrialization, strengthening regional trade, and also adopting technology. Technologies definitely will be really helpful for Africa. So technology-driven solution to address key challenges. We touch on visibility, we touch on trust, we also touch on the lack of efficiency. So for Ivory Coast, for example, which is the largest cocoa producer globally. Less than 10% of its of this cocoa is processed locally, and this represents a significant opportunity to kind of capture more of the 104 billion global chocolate trade. So, I mean, for me, it is it's got to start with a lot of improvement locally. The government needs to have a lot more involvement, a lot more local, rather than at a higher level, and it's not really properly cascaded down. So technology, at least at the lower level, will enable the communities and population to step up. It will reduce the manual hard work sheet that they need to do. So at least for Cozy Connect, it will enable this professional to connect a little bit easier with with those clients. It will provide this trust, this transparency. It will enable them to expand on the business, to have access to credit. We didn't touch on that, but we envision to partner with finance institution for one example. We envision to develop this professional, adding skills to what they already have. So for me, global economic transformation is touching on all these angles, at least with Cozy Connect.
Yes, that's such a great point, Flora. And to me, what would be your takeaway and kind of how you see the year going forward in terms of transformation and trust and transparency?
I think that's for me with inclusion. Continue to include the women, and diversification, because the projects that I'm working on are actually women driven, which really excites me, because the women that are becoming processors, food processors, they subcontract smaller farmers, smaller farmers with about 5 hectares or acres or 10, and then they work with them like they would have about 30, 50, 100. So now you're having these teams of farmers that are actually subcontracting their land to grow food sustainably for a processor who then becomes, then become highly competitive to actually market and be sending their product not only locally, but other parts of Africa, including Europe, and we're working towards the US. And now the technology is also making sure that they are efficient. And this one processor can actually have an oversight of all these smaller farmers. It's almost like aggregates them and lets her know, are they growing this tomato consistently? If they have about 50 of them, are they doing the same thing? What are they following the same steps, etc. Being able to understand what the weather is like, to take precautions, make better data-driven decisions, both for the farmers, for the food processors, and for the governments. Because again, sometimes governments act too late, when communities are in distress, whether there's droughts or whatever floods coming. So we now are in a position where we can say, hey, here's data, and we can forecast to the next 12 months and say, by the way, this community is going to be hit hard. So they can act on time and reduce, spending and money, and also be able to pivot quickly if a project is not working for a community. They can know in real time, looking at that data, and say, okay, this is not working. Let us pivot. What's the feedback? What are the metrics? And instead of relying on old things that, are outdated. So I see this movement. I see openness, especially in Africa, of the government saying, yeah, we actually want to transform agriculture digitally so we can really get to work. And I'm excited about the possibilities that lie ahead. And next year, this time, we can look back and tell a completely different story.
Yes, and I agree. I think the focus on women in business and on entrepreneurship is so important when we're speaking about the economic transformation in this year and going forward. I'm thinking about women are half of the world's population, and so if we empower women, imagine the transformation that can happen on a very large scale. And Vanessa, what about you? What is the takeaway that you would like to see here going forward in this transformation of the economy in 2025?
I think I'd love to just echo what both Flora and Tumi have said. And I think at the heart of each of the things that they have mentioned is just this one word that kept coming up in my mind is like community. Community. Like the reason why women have such positive impacts on their industry and their network is because of how collaborative and community driven they are. And that's just at the heart of tribe, you know, like the women were the ones who were like keeping the homestead safe and protected and making sure everyone was nourished and making sure that all the resources got distributed properly and evenly amongst the tribe, you know. And I think we really need to come back to that understanding of community and collaboration. And I don't know if any of you follow astrology, but as we've entered into the age of Aquarius, which is very highly tech driven, it's also community and like the collective, what is best for the collective, not necessarily the government, not necessarily these elite systems and structures that have kept a lot of the community trapped and enslaved and stuck, you know. It's like how do we just come together, you know? What's going to bring us together as a community and help us work within our communities, and also not exclude anyone who's outside of that too, because when we help other people, we're actually helping ourselves. And when we nourish ourselves, we have more energy and effort to be able to feed into and love and pour into our communities, right? So that beautiful balance of like giving and receiving within that community structure is what is at the heart, I think, of what we need to get back to, you know. And how do we take care of each other and take care of ourselves in equal measure? And how do we do that on a global scale, you know? How do we take those beautiful human principles and embed them into our supply chain, embed them into the business structures? And yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of growth within women stepping into these positions of authority and power, because we need women to nurture Earth back to health, right? Like we need our innate knowledge and wisdom that's been passed down to us through our mothers, generation after generation after generation, of the healing that's necessary. Like it's in our bodies. We're the keepers of that wisdom. And so each of us need to like really dig into our root system, our ancestry, to see who these women were that came before us, so that we can like pour that wisdom back into the world. And yeah, I'm very hopeful in spite of all of the challenges and struggles and hurt and hardship and, you know, divide and conquer tactics that have been placed upon us, you know, just globally, collectively. I think people are starting to wake up to the fact that like we're all inhabitants of this beautiful earth, and we need to just love each other. We need to love the earth, and we need to come back to like the heart center, you know. So that's what I want to see, is like community building. And yeah, especially for women, supporting those women who are leaders, innate leaders, who are like, I see a better way. Let's do it. Let's go. And let's work together to do that, you know? So, yeah.
Well, I think we're off to a great start, and I'm really inspired by all three of you in your amazing companies that you're building, your motivation, your vision. So this has been very inspiring, especially to have a all-woman panel here at the beginning of the year. And I think we're on our way. I think this is really truly the transformation that we will see going forward. Technology is really bringing us full circle in terms of what is starting to become more important in business about building relationships and empowerment and transparency and the community. And so all of this is becoming so important, and I'm very inspired by all of you. So thank you very much for being on our roundtable today. Great start to the year, and I wish all of you a happy new year. It's starting off really well, and I'm sure we're going to be on future roundtables and we're going to see this future unfold right before us. And so it's really exciting, a really exciting time to see things come full circle and really see all of these come to the forefront, these themes of transformation and transparency and trust and the focus on relationship building. It's very, very important going forward. So thank you very much, and wishing you a great start to the year.
Thank
Thank
you
you
so
so much.
much for having us.
Happy year of the snake, everyone. Happy New Year.
Yes, thank you.
Alrighty.
Bye, Melissa. Nice to
Good
meet you.
night.
Bye.
Alrighty. Bye.
Bye,
Bye.
everyone. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of today's episode. If you found value in today's conversation, subscribe, share, and be part of the movement towards a more sustainable and inclusive future. Stay connected with us, and remember, impact isn't just an idea, it's a choice we make every day. So let's build the future together. See you next time on the Impact Best Podcast.